Hey everyone, this is Dr. Miles, and this is Module 1, Video 7, General Considerations for the Body. Here we're going to talk through general protocols. What do we do if we don't have labs in yet, if we don't have symptoms that are very specific to a root cause that we know about? How are we going to generally give protocols for people that are going to be helpful? So, general protocols, first we have to decide when are we going to use a general versus a custom-specific type of protocol. Now, of course, we might use a general protocol if we're dealing with a group of people and we don't have as much one-on-one time, if we don't have a lot of lab information, and if we're dealing with people who are generally well and want to stay well. These are going to be the kinds of times where we might look at a generalized protocol versus a specific protocol. So some of the general lifestyle considerations that are going to be applicable for most people, these are going to be paired together often with supplement protocols, even for specific conditions. So let's imagine that someone has small intestinal bacterial overgrowth and we give them a very specific supplement protocol and dietary protocol for small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. But lifestyle may be a generalized kind of a lifestyle consideration that we would give anyone. And so for general lifestyle considerations, really, we're going to want to help people to have some movement every single day or at least 6 days a week. And that movement every single day is going to be important to have some low-level movement that's frequent throughout the day. A lot of people talk about 10,000 steps a day, and I do like that recommendation. It's approximately 4-ish miles. It depends on how long people's legs are. So walking, of course, is a fantastic movement exercise for people to be doing on a regular basis, and about 4 miles a day is a good general rule of thumb. Now, I will say that what's even more important than getting 10,000 steps per day is actually moving on a regular basis. In other words, not sitting for too prolonged a period of time. In other words, just going for a 4 mile hike, but then sitting for 6 hours straight is not a great way to get the hike is great, but that 6 hour stretch of sitting straight, that is problematic. So what we like to do is recommend about 250 steps or at least 5 to 10 minutes of walking every hour. So 250 steps per hour is a fantastic place to help people to be. And many of the wearable devices can be programmed to remind people to stand and walk around every hour and get that about 250 steps in per hour. And because of the health detriments associated with sitting, this general 250 step per hour movement throughout the day, I believe to be equally, if not more important than an overall 10,000 step per day. Best is both. So 10,000 overall steps per day and at least 250 steps per hour, so regular intervals of movement during the day, and at least 50% of the day standing. So if people work at a desk or at a computer, a mix of a standing and sitting desk, or even better, a treadmill desk, are going to be some of the primary general lifestyle considerations to give. Another general lifestyle consideration to give is regarding more intense activities, so moderate or high intensity activities. So I like high intensity interval training, and at least 2 to 3 days per week, and can be up to 6 days per week. If it's weightlifting, I do like to limit it at 2 to 3 days per week to give enough recovery time. If it's a short burst of high intensity interval training, that can be done up to 6 days a week. What I'll tell people is every single day, do some sort of high intensity interval training with up to 1 day off. And that could be just 5 minutes of sprints or lunges, squats, or some sort of something to get your heart rate up. And then 2 to 3 times a week, do a more intensive period of either up to 30 to 60 minutes of high intensity interval training or 2 to 3 days per week of a weightlifting session. And that weight training can be really, really helpful. So it helps with insulin sensitivity. It helps with muscle formation. It helps with bone density, all sorts of things. So very, very important to get in some different types of movement. And then on the moderate activity levels, on endurance and cardio training, up to 5 hours per week. But if they're doing high-intensity interval training and low-intensity, then no need to add any additional moderate-intensity activity. But if people do prefer to or enjoy doing a sport or something fun that's moderate intensity, or they really like to run or do some sort of biking or something like that, then up to 5 hours per week can be really great on that. So those are some of the general lifestyle considerations. Do not overdo it on exercise. So no 20, 30, 40 hours of cardio per week on an ongoing basis, unless it's very short term for training for something specific and the person's very robust. Otherwise, that can cause additional inflammation. And also avoiding sedentary lifestyle and avoiding sitting for too long of periods of time. Also, daily meditation practice, both sitting meditation and a moving meditation or mindfulness-based practice, doing one of each every single day. Little period of sitting meditation can start even as little as 5 minutes. Better to get more towards 20 minutes to an hour if possible. And then moving meditation as well. Those are also integral parts of a general lifestyle consideration for stress management. And that's very, very important for people. And then, of course, on general lifestyle considerations can be minimizing toxin exposure. So getting out of water-damaged buildings, making sure that the home isn't water-damaged, and avoiding mold or mycotoxins whenever possible, minimizing exposure to those, minimizing exposure to chemicals and toxins in the environment, minimizing exposure to chemical-based and toxin-based cleansing products and household cleaners and personal care products. So those toxin exposures are going to be another piece in relation to general lifestyle considerations for people to consider. General dietary suggestions. Here we're going to have some generalized dietary suggestions that are good for practically everyone. Minimization of refined sugar is going to be one of these. There's pretty much not a person who's going to benefit from high levels of refined sugar, so we're going to recommend minimization of refined sugar. And in general, refined and processed foods being minimized as well. Favoring whole foods, favoring things that are fresh and things that are whole. And so minimizing refined sugar and industrial seed oils. That's going to be canola oil, sunflower oil, safflower oil, corn oil, soy oil, peanut oil are your primary ones to avoid there. Instead, favoring healthful fats like olive oil that's extra virgin and good quality, coconut oil, grass-fed ghee or butter, grass-fed tallow, pastured lard, avocados, nuts, seeds. These are all going to be quality fats that are going to be recommended. Things like macadamia nut oil are fine as well, and there are other more specialty oils like palm kernel oil that can be helpful and fine on the fat side as well. That's some of the generalized dietary suggestions. Of course, lots of vegetables. And if we're doing a generalized dietary suggestion, we can say lots of brightly colored fruits and vegetables, lots of sulfur-rich cruciferous-type vegetables, and lots of dark leafy greens. Now, if someone's FODMAP sensitive or they have a sensitive gut, we may want to edit that, but we're talking general here and not specific to condition. So we may actually edit some of these general suggestions for specific conditions. But if we're speaking in a general way, we could say 2 to 6 cups per day of brightly colored fruits and vegetables, 2 to 6 cups per day of sulfur-rich fruits and vegetables, and 2 to 6 cups per day of the dark leafy greens. And that's going to be a helpful suggestion for people. And in general, healthful meats, so organic and or grass-fed meats, and eating nose to tail, having some cuts of meat that are things like chuck or rump, or having oxtail or liver organ meats can be really helpful and nutrient-dense and nutrient-rich as well. Again, certain conditions where we might avoid those, like in cases of iron overload, we wouldn't want to do liver, for example. But you know, as a general recommendation, that would be just fine and helpful to recommend. And for most people, fresh fruits are just fine to have a few servings per day and several servings per week of fresh fruits, especially brightly colored fruits and ones like berries that have tons of antioxidants and phytonutrients in them are going to be very, very helpful. And on the general exercise suggestions, that's our 10,000 steps per day and 250 steps per hour and 2 to 3 days per week of a longer high-intensity interval training session or weightlifting session, and then daily short high-intensity interval training as well is possible there. General sleep hygiene suggestions are going to be to avoid blue lights and bright lights at night. Maybe wear blue blocker glasses or amber glasses after sunset, and or install apps like Flux on the computer or use night shift mode on the phone, and also reduce brightness as much as possible on computers, phones, TVs, and avoid electronic use altogether 2 hours before bed for people with insomnia. Relaxing activities at night like bathing, meditation, gentle mindfulness, movement practices, and gentle, low-lit, loving conversations with family and friends can be great relaxing activities to do at night. Replacing some lights with red or amber lights and turning those on at night and turning off brightly colored blue spectrum of lights, or using LED candles or non-toxic regular candles for candlelight at night can be great ways of reducing light exposure. We've even in our home installed a red light in our refrigerator and bathroom so that we can be sure to have that able to, you know, not be exposed to blue light and bright light, even for a few seconds, even for a half a minute or a minute, can disrupt melatonin production. So reducing that blue light and that bright light at night, and then increasing bright light or sunlight exposure in the morning. So either getting a 10,000 lux bulb and doing bright light exposure indoors, or getting outside, and even better, getting a walk in the morning with sun exposure. And that light first thing is going to help cortisol production and regulate circadian rhythm. So those are some of the main sleep hygiene suggestions that can help maximize melatonin production and regulate cortisol production. In the last module, we're going to cover some more specifics on some of the general suggestions. So this is going to give you a big, good starting point for some generalized kinds of suggestions, and we will get into a little more nitty-gritty on certain things. So with that, thank you so much for watching. Our next video is going to cover general protocols, more on the supplement side, and detoxification. Look forward to seeing you then, and have a great day, and take care.